this little epistle to the church, dealing with our faith and how it is revealed or that it is proven by our daily activities, by the trials we go through, by the things that we do in our daily walk here on earth. James 5, begin reading in verse 1. "Go to now, ye rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. Ye have heaped treasure together for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth. And the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. Ye have lived in pleasure on the earth and been wanton. Ye have nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter. Ye have condemned and killed the just, and he doeth not resist you." Probably one of the areas of our life, I probably have said this about every section that we've studied, but one of the areas that affects all of us, small or great, and by that I mean just a few things or a multitude of riches, that is the temptation that riches bring with them, material things. And of course, as we have looked at this epistle, looking at the trials, looking at the test, looking at the temptations that try our faith, that prove our faith, or that actually exercise our faith, like a person exercising their muscles, many of the things God brings into our life, or that he allows in our life, actually exercise our faith. And if we respond appropriately, they will grow our faith, and they will prove our faith to be solid, to be that which will stick and stay. And of course, as we grow, we get stronger in our faith. We're more able to trust and to lean on God and to be confident in the things that he asks us. And as we start out in our life, we read about those that we perceive to have had great faith, and great things were accomplished in their life. But if you could go back and follow that person, if you could sit down and talk with them, they would tell you they didn't consider themselves a person of great faith. They were just living for the Lord, and they were doing each day the things that God brought to them to do. What it was the accumulation of their entire life. When you finally look back on it, you realize they were a person that grew up in the faith and that had a strong faith, one that was kind of extraordinary when compared with other people. When our faith is tested, then we know what our metal is made of. We know what our faith really is. We know if our worldview that we studied this morning is really scriptural and is lasting, if it's something that'll hold us. So here he turns, and he's actually using the ungodly rich people, those that are trusting in their riches and have no time for God or no thought of God. He's using them as an example of what happens to people when they get caught up in the material possessions in this present world, and they really began to put their trust in material things. Now, we point to the rich, and, you know, most of us have a little and that's all, and we don't consider ourselves filthy rich people. We might know a few, but we're not there ourselves. And sometimes we look at them and we're pointing. But I can tell you that all of you, compared to people I know in other parts of the world, are rich people. You have far more than they'll ever dream of having in all of their lifetime. And if you measured where they're at in a financial status to where you're at right now, you're rich to them. So it's according to where you're at and how you're looking at it, whether you'd be considered rich or not. But if we're talking about the material possessions. And believe me, the Bible teaches very clearly there's absolutely nothing wrong. There's no sin in the material possession. It's what it does to you. It's what you do with it that causes the sin. An automobile or a house or a block of gold that's worth $1 billion just sits there. It does nothing either way. It's just there. It's the person that holds title to it, and it's the person that uses it, makes utility of it, that can make it sinful or actually make it something that's for the glory of God. That's left up to the person that's using it. Too many people get caught up in the false assumption that by having material things, they have security. That by having material things, they should be afforded a certain position of prestige or position or power. And it's easy to come to that because when we look around us, we realize that in our age, right now, if a man's going to run for public office, he pretty much has to be a millionaire just to run. He also has to have a lot of friends that are millionaires. And if he's running for the high offices, he better have a whole bunch of friends that are millionaires because it's going to take hundreds of millions of dollars for him to gain his office. And to me, that's a sin in itself. But the thing is, people get the false conception that that makes you somebody, that your possessions make you some sort of person. And this whole passage right here is being thrust at us by the Spirit to help us understand. God put the material things here for you to use, period. And you're to use them, that's all. You're to utilize them. You're not to allow them to get control of you. You're not to allow them to become that in which you put your faith and your trust. Because as we study someone like Job, or as we look in our own day and look at the victims of Hurricane Katrina, we moved down to Honduras a week or so ago and looked at the victims there of that storm, and we realized it doesn't matter what your level of material possessions is, they can all be gone in a few moments of time, even your life, even your family. And when we study the scriptural picture of Job, probably what would be considered in today's economy a billionaire, in a few moments of time, all of it was gone. And he, of course, was really disturbed and perplexed. Why? And he was very careful how he measured it, how he looked at it, and the scripture tells us he never did come to the place that he charged God foolishly or that he sinned in what he was doing as he examined his situation and tried to find some answers. In fact, his friends who came to comfort him were the ones that ended up sinning. God actually told him at the end they had to offer a sacrifice. And Job would have to do it for him because he would accept Job but not them, implying that they had done something that caused separation between them and God. They needed to be repentant. But the thing is, it was all about the possessions. That's what stirred everybody up. That's what got everybody excited. And again, as James has led us through here, in chapter 1 we looked at the trials and temptations which test our faith and prove our faith. In chapter 2, we looked at the daily activities of our life, the things we do every day which prove or disprove our faith. In chapter 3, our daily talk, how we use our tongue, how we have to be careful with the words we use. It proves, it tests our faith. In chapter 4, the control of the flesh, our relationships with other people, with ourselves and with God, how we plan our day, our week, our month, and our year reveals our trust and our faith and our acknowledgement of God or our lack of that. It's proven all the time in our activity. Now we come to material possessions, the things that we have in this life. And he starts right off looking at ungodly rich people. That's what he's going to use as his example. That's the picture he's going to put before us. And he tells them, go to now. You don't have to wait to eternity. You don't have to wait to the judgment. He says, go to now. You rich men. And again, he's talking about those who have their full confidence, their full trust in their material possessions. He says, you go, you weep and you howl. In other words, you put up the greatest mourning that's possible to a man's heart. You weep and you howl because of the miseries that shall come upon you. They haven't seen yet the fullness of what's going to happen to them because their faith has been placed in material things and in what it can purchase them in the material world. So he says, go, weep and howl because of what you know is coming. And of course, this is a sad indictment. It should never be that way. Doesn't matter what a man owns, he should never be in the position of the people that James is letting us look at here. Because their life has been one that's dragged into just pure misery. Christ himself warned us about the love of money. It's not the money. It's not the material things. It's the desire for it. It's the love for it. It's that in which you put your trust that draws your trust away from God. And of course, what people do is they think, if I just have that, I'll be happy. If I have that, I'll be secure. If I can just reach that level of financial stability, then I'll be okay. Men plan, and there's nothing wrong with planning. In fact, it's something we should do, as we looked last week. I just have to make sure in my planning that I acknowledge God and that He's the one with the ultimate plan. He can change my plan anytime He wants to without giving me any notice. But as I plan, my faith can never rest in what I have. Nothing wrong with a man setting up a retirement account because he knows, especially in our day, when you reach that time, you better have something to help cushion you or you're going to be, out on the street. Nothing wrong with that. But when my faith's in that, when I feel that I don't need God anymore because I have finally got my security, then it's become a point of misery for me because it's going to bring misery into my life because it's replaced my faith in God. I now have made my material possessions my idol. When my confidence is there, it's not in where it should be. Material possessions always pose dangerous perils in our life. Reason? I forget that possessions do not make the man. It doesn't matter if the suit I have on tonight costs $5 or $500. I'm still the same person in either suit. It doesn't matter tonight if I drove to church in a $500 vehicle or a $5 million vehicle. I'm still the same man. Just because I ride in that car and hold title to that car doesn't make me any different. I'm still the same person in my heart. It doesn't matter, and you know what? As human beings, We really have a hard time with that because we think it does matter. In fact, we show that it matters. If we back up in James, he gave us warning about when the rich man or the man of position and power comes to your church and you give him the prominent seat while you made everybody else sit somewhere else. It shows your attitude toward material possessions that you do attribute the fact that they make a person something special. Here he's saying the possessions, the riches, does not make the man. It has nothing to do with his character, his true person. In fact, he has to be careful that the riches don't corrupt him. Because one thing that riches do is cause pride. They cause me to think I am more than what I really am. All of us have heard jokes, we've made jokes. In fact, sometimes we might have been the joke about dressing up for church or dressing up for this or that. I've had people actually tell me, well, I want to make sure I don't dress up for church. Well, now that's a good reason not to dress up because somebody else did. That means they're controlling your life. I dress up for church because I want to honor the Lord, period. And all He expects of me is what's best of me. I don't go buy a $1,000 suit because that's way out of my price range. I buy what I can afford, the best I can afford. That's what I want to wear when I'm coming to worship Him. To me, that's how it should be. That's the principle of the whole thing. But when I come to church, I don't want people to remember what I wore and not remember me. Because I'm the person, not the suit. You're the person, not your dress or your sweater or your hat or whatever else you might be wearing. And whenever what you've got on stands out more than you, then you got a problem. But our pride many times makes us want others to notice, and we buy accordingly. If that were not true, fads and fashions wouldn't have any impact on our society. And everybody knows that fads and fashions is what drives our society. People buy, your kids buy, based on what they saw on television. It's the fad of the moment. And as soon as that fad's gone, guess what? You got to buy something else because there's something new out there. It's all about my position. It shows that I am somebody because I drive this car, I wear these clothes, I have this as my possession. I hold title to that. It makes me somebody special. And what God is helping us to see is it doesn't. All it does is corrupt your soul because it causes you to have a pride that's false. You're not any different than you were before. It's amazing how many of the millionaires, multimillionaires, have made the statement, I give everything I've got if I could be happy like that person. And they're usually pointing at somebody that has nothing, but they're happy. Usually they're Christians because they're rejoicing in the Lord. That's all they have. And that's all they need. Again, there's nothing wrong with material possessions. Nothing wrong with money. What's wrong is what it does to the individual, what they allow it to do to them. He gives warning here. Material possessions, no matter what they are, naturally decay. All of you that own a home know there's one rule that you live by. You have to maintain your home. If you own other things, whatever you want, you have to maintain it, because if you just let it set there in a very few short years, it'll start to fall down. Why? Because it decays. And he says here, the rich man that's trusting in his riches is going to weep and howl. Why? Because the riches corrupt. In other words, they start to decay. You can have 500 suits in the closet and 300 in storage. Guess what's going to happen to them? In this day, today we have things that prevents moss, so we don't have as much trouble with that, but they decay anyway. And the ideal here of saying moth-eaten is the fact you can only wear one at a time. You can have 300, but you can't wear 300. In fact, if you tried to wear all 300 in one day, you'd have a hard time getting them all on throughout the day. You wouldn't have enough hours. The thing is, it's not how much you got. It's whether or not you utilize it properly. And that's the ideal there. It's all going to decay. You drive a car, you got to fix that car. You use a house, you got to repair that house. If you have a rental house and other people use it, you're going to have to repair that. They don't. Everything that I have is going to decay. I have to realize that. And if I have possessions, I have to maintain them. And if I'm not real careful, what happens? And some of us that are workaholics by nature know what happens. I get and I get and I get and I kill myself maintaining. In the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon said, chapter 5, verses 10 to 12, he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. And you've heard more than one time, people talking to a rich person, and one fellow in particular, they asked him the question on television. And they said, well, how much more money would you have to be satisfied? Just one more dollar. But when you get that dollar, what's your next statement? How much more money would you have to have? Just one more dollar. Because you're never satisfied. You can always see the need for just one more. That's when your trust is in that, okay? That's where your faith is, your confidence. You don't ever get quite enough because you never can be totally secure in your soul with material things. There's always just that little nagging hole there that maybe it might rain a little longer than I expected, and my rainy day fund may need to be a little bit more than what it is. And again, we're taught in Proverbs and the Scriptures that you should have a certain amount set back for the day of calamity. You're a fool if you don't, because you're going to have rainy days. But if that's where your faith is, then you're in trouble, because you're going to be let down, because that can't take care of your soul. That can't maintain you. Even in a big calamity, that ain't going to do it, because it's not enough. There's never enough to say I have absolute security, and that's the whole point he's making here. Material possessions decay naturally. You can't trust them. Maintaining them If I have to maintain them, and this is what he says in verses 11 and 12 of Ecclesiastes 5, when goods increase, they are increased that eat them. When a man starts a business, usually just him, and he does enough work to make him enough money to feed his family, pay his bills, that's all he has to worry about. If his business grows, guess what happens? He has to get more tools. He has to hire people to help him. And guess what he has to worry about then? He has to have enough work constantly to take care of the tools and pay for them and maintain them, and then also to supply these people with enough finances to take care of them. Guess who has to worry about that? Not his employees, not his tools. He has to take care of that. And that's what he says right here in verse 11 of Ecclesiastes 5. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them, and what good is there to the owners thereof? Well, he's worth more, and he may have a little more in his checking account now, but what does he have to do to maintain that? He has to work. When his employee gets done with his 8 hours, goes home, slays down and sleeps, guess what he's doing? He's taking care of the tools. He's laying out the plans for tomorrow so that those employees can work, and he's working and they're sleeping. That's just part of it. Not a sin necessarily in that, but when that becomes all there is, and when that's the focus of life, and when that's all there is in my life, and if you're a workaholic, but it didn't take long for it to get there, when that's all there is, then I'm headed for misery. And that's what he's saying. I'm headed for misery. Material possessions, verse 3. You save them up, and the very canker of them, and you see, if I saved enough so that it lays there long enough that it cankers, you know, it's like having 5 loaves of bread. If you bought 5 loaves of bread tonight, unless you eat a whole lot of bread, you're going to lose a couple of them to mold. If you don't put them in the freezer or you don't preserve them some way, if you just lay them on the shelf there at your house in the kitchen, you'll never eat all five before part of it's molded. And that's the concept here in verse 3. If you've got more than you can utilize, you've got more sitting there than you really need, but you're going to keep it, then it's going to canker and it's going to rust, and the very decay of them is going to be a witness against you at the judgment. It's going to be a witness against you here because, number one, you worry about it. You got to maintain it. You got to keep it up. You got more than you need. You got more than you have to have. You got more than you can utilize, but you're going to keep it. And the Lord gave us an example of that, didn't he, from Luke chapter 12. The parable of the man, the farmer. Rich man had land, it brought forth plentifully. He said within himself, what shall I do? I don't have enough room to bestow my fruits. And he said, this will I do. I'll tear down my barns, I'll build greater, I'll bestow all of my fruits and goods, and I'll say to my soul, soul, thou hast many goods laid up for many days. Take thine ease. And the Lord said, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. And who's going to get all this? And again, the picture is not that you don't keep anything, but that you only keep that which is necessary to maintain your life, that which you can utilize in your life. Why? Because he says, they shall be a witness against you, and they shall eat your flesh as it were fire. They shall literally bring a witness against you at the judgment because you have heaped them up. And that's the word he uses in verse 3. You heaped it up. In other words, it's more than you need. It's more than you can utilize. And he says in verse 4, God's holding the record. He refocuses his attention now as to how some people get their wealth. And I always warn people that are blessed, and thank God for wealthy people. I'd be happy if our church had a few millionaires in it. It'd be nice, especially if they tithe. It'd be great, because we could increase our mission budget. But whenever I have acquired my wealth by illegal, fraudulent, or other means than which God has said, and what's God's one word for gaining wealth? It's literally a four-letter word. It's called work. If you want money, work and get it. Now, some people are very wise in their work. They know how to do jobs and get money. They know how to get it done faster. They know how to do it and get a good return on it. They know how to sell stuff and get it. That's great. If you've got that ability, go at it. Let God bless you at it. But then utilize it under God's direction. You don't have to be fraudulent with those that are employed by you. You don't have to be on the sly with your taxes and with the government and whatever. You don't have to do any of that. Because God will bless you and honor you in honest labor. He said He would. That's God's concept. You work, you do it right, you do what's best, God will take care of it. God will bless you. And if God can trust you, He's liable to give you all kinds of material possessions. But you see, that's when God blesses you. In verse 4, we're looking at the fellow whose cry of his employees has gone up to the ears of God. They labor, and when I read this verse, you know the little movie from old days that always comes to mind? The Christmas Carol. Remember Bob Cratchit that worked for old Scrooge? Now he lived in that little apartment down on the ground, down under the ground, actually with his little family. And they had this little slab of meat for their holiday. And why? Well, because his boss just wouldn't pay him decent wages. What happened after Mr. Scrooge was converted? He brought the biggest goose in town and gave it to them for their holiday meal. The thing is, I can be honest in my business, in dealing with my material possessions, and I can own whatever God will trust me with. The thing is, I'm not trusting in it, I'm trusting in Him. And he says here, for those who do fraudulent business, who do cut the corners, who do cheat the government, who do these things, thinking that they're securing for themselves material possessions because they need them, the cry of those that have been defrauded have gone up to the Lord of Sabbath, and He has a record. And I like to remind myself quite often of everything I say and do, God has the record book. He's holding that book. And one day, He's going to open that book, and I have to answer to it. He has the record of how we obtained what we have. He has a record of how we maintain what we have. And He definitely has the record of how we look at it. Now He shows us how rich people sometimes use their funds. Verse 5. You have lived in pleasure on the earth and been wanton. Your heart's never been satisfied. You throw big parties, you've just kind of throwed your money as if it was sand, and you just had all kinds of pleasure. You've lived to satisfy the flesh. You've been plentiful in spending on yourself. You nourish your hearts. You eat like a person does in the day of slaughter. You've fattened yourself up while others have gone without. That's the picture he's putting. And his reminder is that God holds the record. One day, you're going to give an account. God blessed you. This is how you've used it now, that God's blessed you. And one day, you're going to give an account. And then the last one, verse 6, is the saddest one. He said, you have condemned and killed the just. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they murdered him outright physically, but they murdered their character. They caused them to suffer needlessly. He said, you have condemned, you've bad-mouthed them, you've said things against them, or you've put out the word that they're not a good employee, or you've done whatever, when in reality, they were good people. They were hard workers. And just because of your power and your position, you have caused them a lot of hurt, you've caused them pain and suffering, and God has the record. Many of them didn't even resist you. They just allowed you to run over them because they didn't know how to fight against the power that you had because of your possessions, so they didn't resist. But God has a record. The whole concept is your faith is revealed, or your lack thereof, by how you handle the things God allows you to have in this life, the material possessions. And God looks at the heart to see if your trust is in them and the power and position they seem to bring, or if your trust is still in the Lord, even while you use the things He's blessed you with, your trust is still in Him. Your faith is revealed by how you use the material things God has entrusted into your care. Thank you, Father, for the time in your word. I pray you'll help us as we study this great little epistle about daily life and how it reveals our faith. Bless us now in the week, guide us in it, and direct us. We do pray these blessings in Christ's name, for His glory. Amen. Thank you for being in the service tonight. Do be much in prayer for activities, ladies meeting Tuesday night, senior meeting on Thursday, and then our Bible study starts the following Tuesday. Of course, Saturday is the banquet there at the camp, so keep those activities in your mind and heart. Let's stand.